Honor of Peter Jonathan Kreshi, if I'm pronouncing the last name correctly. May we please have appearances? Mr. McNamara.
May it please the court, Chief Justice Ravner, Justices of the Court, in a unanimous decision, the Disciplinary Review Board considered certifications of the record filed by the Office of Attorney Ethics and determined that respondent must be disbarred for knowingly misappropriating client, escrow, and trust funds in three client matters under DRB 18-196. The board determined that respondent knowingly misappropriated at least $16,675 in the Noella Figueroa matter, $6,781.09 in the Mortgage Plus matter, and at least $3,278.62 in the Bartasiewicz matter. Under that docket number, the board found that respondent committed a total of 20 RPC violations, including committing a criminal act that reflects adversely on the attorney's honesty, trustworthiness, or fitness as a lawyer, engaging in conduct involving dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation in all three client matters, as well as failing to cooperate in the OE's investigation of all three client matters as well. In the other docketed matter before this court, DRB 18-124, the board determined that respondent practiced law while suspended, that he committed the criminal offense, the unauthorized practice of law, and that he engaged in conduct involving dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation, and that he again failed to cooperate with disciplinary authorities. Accordingly, between these two dockets, the board found that respondent committed a total of 24 RPC violations. The board indicated that in their view, respondent must be disbarred for knowingly misappropriating client, escrow, and trust funds in the 18-196 matter. The board wrote in their decision that if the court determines that respondent did not knowingly misappropriate any funds, they still recommend his disbarment for his cumulative violations. The board indicated that in all three client matters, respondent lied to his clients, to the third parties, as well as to the Office of Attorney Ethics. The board found that respondent didn't make misrepresentations here and there. Rather, he lied repeatedly when expedient to Figueroa, to Bach, and to Bartasiewicz, as well as to the OEE. The board wrote that the extent and the degree of respondent's pathological dishonesty, and that's the Disciplinary Review Board's words, pathological dishonesty, alone warrant a 2 to 3 year suspension. In the Figueroa matter, respondent settled his client's employment case, never told her about the settlement, even when she was asking about the status of the case. He forged her signature on the settlement documents. He fabricated a letter to her, attaching a breakdown of the settlement funds, and he repeatedly lied to the Office of Attorney Ethics about the matter during our investigation. In the Mortgage Plus matter, he again lied to the Office of Attorney Ethics when he stated that he had retained the disputed $6,781.09 in escrow, knowing that he had invaded the funds that he was obligated to hold intact until the dispute was resolved. And in the Bartasiewicz case, the board found that respondent knowingly misappropriated at least $3,278.64 in trust funds belonging to the Bartasiewicz estate. Respondent not only lied to Bartasiewicz about the status of the estate when he met with him to sign a certification, but he also, as the board found, strong-armed Bartasiewicz into signing another certification 3 years later so that our office, the OEE, would believe that Bartasiewicz was satisfied with the respondent's handling of the estate. The board indicated that at a minimum, a 3 year suspension would be in order for respondent's lies. Now, the board indicated in their decision that the question becomes whether the totality of the misconduct in these three cases, plus the misconduct in the practicing while a suspended matter, renders respondent unsalvageable and thus unworthy of continued membership in the bar. The board indicated that in their view, it most certainly does, especially when other aggravating factors are taken into consideration. The board pointed out that in addition to these dockets, respondent also defaulted in DRB 18-075, the matter in which this court recently imposed a censure on him. Further, the board emphasized that respondent over the years has repeatedly filed motions to vacate that do nothing but parrot the same arguments over and over regarding whether they apply to the case at hand or the board's prior rejection of them. The board also indicated that in further aggravation, respondent refuses to file the required affidavit of compliance under Rule 1:20-20, thus establishing that he has little to no interest in practicing law. The board cited as support for their position the case of In re DiRenzo, a case which covers protection of the public and whether an attorney is unsalvageable. Board determined that respondent has determined that he is unsalvageable, and the board expressed no hesitation at all as to whether or not the knowing misappropriation cases were proven. They just indicated that even if this court were not to find any of those three knowing misappropriation cases were valid, they should still be disbarred. If this court has any lingering doubt about whether respondent should be disbarred for committing knowing misappropriation in the three separate client cases and for practicing while suspended and for repeatedly failing to cooperate with the OEE for years, one need only look at his claim about why the default should be vacated in order to get a better sense and a better picture about how this respondent has thumbed his nose repeatedly at the ethics system for years and years. And this has continued as recently as the brief that he submitted to the court. One of the docs before the court, DRB 18-196, which is the knowing misappropriation case, in a letter dated October 23, 2017, the board considered a prior motion to vacate default filed by the respondent and determined to deny the motion as moot. In the board's correspondence, the board agreed with the OEE that respondent's answer did not fully comply with In re Gavel or with the court rule 120-4E. The board specifically indicated that the more appropriate position that should be taken is that a special master or a panel chair should be assigned, and they would schedule a pre-hearing conference where the sufficiency of respondent's answer would be taken into account. And once it was addressed, then if respondent was required to file a more compliant answer and failed to do so, the fact finder may determine, pursuant to 1:20-5C, to suppress respondent's answer. Thereafter, this court assigned the Honorable Fullilove as the special master in this matter. Consistent with the board's October 23, 2017 decision, Judge Fullilove considered the sufficiency of respondent's amended answer and then, pursuant to Rule 1:20-5C, suppressed respondent's amended answer. Thereafter, the OEE certified these matters as default. Now, respondent cannot cogently claim that he was unaware of the dictates of Gavel and the court rule. Respondent was given multiple opportunities over and over and over about his responsibilities to satisfy Gavel. He was put on notice of this at least six different times. First, as far back as around January 17, 2017, respondent was served with a copy of the complaint. At the time, he was advised in detail by the OEE that he must file an answer that complies with Gavel and the court rule. Second, thereafter on July 12, 2017, the OEE documented in writing again that he must file Gavel and the court rule with his answer. Third, on October 23, 2017, the board agreed with the OEE, as I've just indicated, and indicated to him that the board did not fully, that the answer did not fully comply with Gavel and the court rule. Respondent was told that in writing. Fourth, on January 9, 2018, the OEE provided a pre-hearing memorandum to Judge Fullilove. The OEE specifically referenced respondent's answer and that it did not comply with Gavel and the court rule. Again, the OEE put respondent on notice of the board's decision that his answer didn't comply with Gavel. Fifth, during a March 14, 2018 conference with Judge Fullilove, which respondent participated in, the parties discussed the sufficiency of respondent's answer. Respondent acknowledged on the telephone that he needed to file an amended answer. He was given the opportunity to file that amended answer. And in an order dated March 22, 2018, as a sixth notice, Judge Fullilove ordered that respondent had until April 11, 2018 to file an amended answer that complied with Gavel and the court rule. Thereafter, in an email submission right before midnight on April 11, 2018, respondent provided an amended answer which still did not comport with the court's decision in Gavel. Judge Fullilove gives in his decision numerous examples about how it did not satisfy at all the requirements of Gavel. For example, there are times in the complaint that a chart is given of financial numbers. The bank account says X, or this letter indicates Y. Respondent wouldn't even answer. If you were to look at any of those paragraphs, he'll just say denied and then go into claim about why he's not responsible for the complaint, rather than specifically responding to any of the parts of the complaint as he was required to do so. Judge Fuller Love suppressed respondent's answer and barred his defenses pursuant to the rules. Respondent was copied on the OEE's application. He did not contest the arguments made by the OEE. Judge Fuller Love issued an opinion suppressing respondent's answer and barring defenses. The respondent was given that proposed form of order to Judge Fuller Love. Respondent was copied on that order. He didn't object. Instead of demonstrating to the board, paragraph by paragraph, how he believed that Judge Fuller Love erred in determining that the amended answer complied with Gavel, he instead referred to a totally different answer for a different respondent, having nothing to do with him, to try to explain that his amended answer was satisfactory. And with regard to the second matter before this court, DRB 18-124, practicing while suspended, the board denied respondent's motion to vacate the fault and indicated he did absolutely nothing more than copy and paste the same claims he had made in the motion to vacate the default for the knowing misappropriation cases. Meanwhile, in that docket, he was not charged with practicing. He was charged with practicing while suspended, not knowing misappropriation. Totally different, and yet that's what he submitted to the board. Excuse me, to Judge Fuller Love, and then ultimately argued to the board. The knowing misappropriation case was the one before Judge Fuller Love, not the practicing while suspended. In respondent's brief to this court, respondent represents that he has not been ignoring the activities of the OEE. Actually, the opposite is true. Due to longstanding difficulties with obtaining his cooperation, the OEE moved for his temporary suspension, which was granted by this court. It is hard to imagine how a respondent can represent to this court, as recently as a couple of weeks ago when he submitted his brief, to say that he has not been ignoring the OEE, when he never responded to a single letter from the OEE requesting information from him. Letters were sent by regular and certified mail over 30 times. He responded to zero. Respondent did not file an answer to the complaint. He didn't appear for an interview with the OEE. Respondent's false statement that he has not been ignoring the activities of the OEE is illustrative of how the board was able to come to the conclusion that respondent engaged in pathological dishonesty. Moreover, significant delays in the processing of both of these dockets were caused by respondents' long-standing failure to cooperate. As you can see in the complaint that was for both of these matters, he was charged with failing to cooperate on each of the three knowing misappropriation cases, as well as the practicing law while suspended. Each of those allegations were found to be warranted and substantiated by the DRB. In addition to not offering reasonable explanations for his failure to provide answers to the ethics complaint, respondent failed to assert meritorious defenses to the underlying charges. Respondent crosses way over the line of advocacy when he has the gall to accuse the director of the Office of Attorney Ethics of engaging in misconduct. Respondent actually makes the claim that he would have his court believe that individuals in Hudson County somehow convinced Director Centenaro to pursue warrantless ethics charges against him, and that Director Centenaro then assigned the cases to an assistant ethics counsel, a supervising attorney, and an investigator who also agreed to then have respondent disbarred for no appropriate reason. And then in order for respondent's vision to take place, three separate grievances having totally unrelated cases to each other, all had to file unwarranted grievances against him. And then in turn, the board had to review all these matters and find that he was responsible for all these cases. And yet respondent indicates in his papers that he is the innocent victim in all of this. Respondent is the innocent victim as he sees it, even though he pled guilty to uttering a false document with regard to one of the knowing misappropriation matters. Doesn't put that in his brief. Respondent's outrageous conduct in stealing from his clients, ignoring the OEE for years, practicing law while suspended, filing a nonsensically worded lawsuit against the OAE, while at the same time not even filing an answer in one of these dockets, and he stands before this court in one of the two dockets that he has yet to cooperate with the OAE, he has yet to file an answer to the complaint, and when he submitted his brief to the court, he doesn't even cover that docket. Doesn't even cover it. Never explained to this court why he never filed an answer. Accordingly, the OAE believes that the board's 85-page decision should be followed. Respondent should be disbarred.
Mr. McNamara, you've told us that both matters have proceeded by default. There's a motion to vacate default. At any time, did Mr. Kreshi come forward with a defense on the merits to the charges?
No. Your Honor, what he did was on the matter of the three disbarments, the three known misappropriations, his allegation has been that the OAE is out to get him. With regard to each of these individual cases, nothing. If Your Honor pleases, with regard to the Figueroa matter, the OAE was reviewing his financial records on an unrelated case. And the investigator assigned to the case saw what they thought were irregularities in terms of his financial matters. So the investigator contacts Figueroa and asks her about, you know, did you resolve this case with this attorney? And she had no idea that the case had been resolved because he never told her. Respondent had, and this is all in the ethics complaint, and so because he never filed, and you know, it was defaulted, this is all found as true. Respondent claimed that out of the settlement for the employment case, that the $25,000 check that he received was supposed to be his money because he was the one that got her the unemployment. The fact that she applied for the unemployment on her own and that he never did anything with regard to getting her unemployment apparently is lost on the respondent. Further, the OAE is part of our investigation. We contacted three different defense attorneys for that employment case, and they said they never had any discussions with respondent about the unemployment being part of the settlement. And just as a practical consideration, how could it possibly have been part of the matter? A person who's on unemployment is supposed to be looking for a job. So how could you ever value what the value of getting unemployment would be as part of a settlement case when you're supposed to be looking for the job? It makes no sense, the argument that he made. He also signed, the check is made out to Figueroa and to the Cressy Law Firm. He just deposited that into his business account. So with regard to the Figueroa known misappropriation case, that case alone is strong enough to have this respondent disbarred. But in terms of meritorious defenses, you know, Chief Justice Brabner, there haven't been any other than this conspiracy theory. And with regard to the other docket of practicing while suspended, nothing, no response. Didn't respond to over 30 letters by our office, didn't respond by asking him to come into our office for an interview, and didn't file an answer to the complaint.
Thank you. Anything else?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Kreshi, I know you've reserved time, and we will give you an uninterrupted period of 5 minutes that you had requested. I just want to emphasize one thing at the outset. You understand there's been a finding of knowing misappropriation, which under our law leads to disbarment. I would suggest that as part of your remarks, you address whether there is a merits-based defense. I have not seen one yet, and you heard Mr. McNamara's representation on that point. I'd ask you to address that as you proceed. Please go ahead.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Would please the court. Good afternoon. My name is Peter J. Kreshi, and obviously I'm here as a respondent to defend my actions as well as defend my license. I want to thank you for your time, and I want to apologize that it's gone this far. I think the best way to address is I was brought here or asked to respond to an order to show cause why the default should not stand. The answer that I filed is set forth in respondents 1 through 46. I specifically went through each paragraph of the complaint, and without any discovery, without any interviews, I know depositions are not allowed in this type of venue. I answered that to the best of my ability. So, in fact, an answer was filed, as Mr. McNamara has set forth before Judge Fullilove, and basically what he found is what the OAE found, that it didn't meet In Re Gavel. The rules and In Re Gavel suggest that if an answer that is verified is filed, a default cannot stand. I'd like to address who I am. Succinctly, I'm a licensed attorney for 26 years, a married father of four of high school age children. I served the United States Army in the Judge Advocate General's Corps. I was approved by the U.S. Senate to be on staff and faculty at West Point. I'm a Gulf War veteran, and I held the top secret security clearance. One of the things that Mr. McNamara did not suggest was the timing and the age of these cases. Now, 2005 was the beginning of the estate, the Bartosiewicz estate. 2009 was the real estate closing, and 2010 and settled in 2011 was the Figueroa matter. To suggest that I didn't cooperate with OAE is a falsity. There was a woman named Jan Richter who held Mr. McNamara's job prior to. I met her in person, face to face, no less than four times. We spoke over the phone. We had communications. Mr. McNamara himself had me come to his office on January 28, 2013, to take my statement in the Figueroa matter under oath, in which later, unbeknownst to me, was used in the criminal matter. I also returned on May 10th and 11th of 2016 to Mr. McNamara's office, in which each and every allegation was answered or described to the best of my ability. So to set forth that somehow I didn't cooperate is not true. Moreover, as set forth in my brief, on April 19, 2016, Mr. McNamara called my ethics attorney, the Rotolo law firm, Woody Cornog, and suggested that I resign my license. Now, no hearing had been set. No complaint had been filed. Yet Mr. McNamara, on April 19, 2016, wanted to take my license. That suggested to me that there was a problem. To say that the politicos in Hudson County are not involved is a fallacy. Not only are these complaints, the Figueroa, the Bach complaint, and to some extent Bartosiewicz, related to the city of Bayonne and Hudson County attorneys who not only helped file those grievances but suggested that they do so. Now, as I said to Jan Richter, the investigator, I took responsibility. Foremost, there was no misappropriation or intent to misappropriate. Fortunately, from my time in the service as a JAG officer and as a special assistant U.S. attorney, I became okay or pretty good with knowing the system and the tort claims, and I had served, I believe, over 6,000 clients. There was no need for me to take anyone's money. In fact, as I set forth in my answer and in my brief, Jan Richter facilitated the Mr. Box. What it was a mortgage referral fee that he was supposed to get from Security Atlantic. That was returned. He is satisfied. In fact, in the spring of 2016, he wrote a letter to Mr. McNamara, I don't want to pursue this. I wish Mr. Kreshi luck. The Figueroa matter, yes, very dicey. She did know. The fact that Mr. McNamara says she never knew about her settlement, that's unheard of. This was a federal court case, and as we know, on Rule 16 conferences, a joint discovery plan is set forth. Ms. Figueroa was aware of it. She was aware of her interrogatories, requests for documents. She was with me throughout the whole case. The problem was that Ms. Figueroa's father had died. She did not want to pursue this matter anymore, couldn't pursue this matter anymore. If we dig deeper, and hopefully if this default is vacated and I'm allowed to have a hearing and to do some discovery, I'll be able to show, as I've received through my federal cases, that Mr. Charles D'Amico, who did work with Mr. Centenaro in Hudson County prosecutor's office, had Ms. Figueroa sign the grievance and the criminal complaint the same day in his office in the city of Bayonne. Now, does that take away from the fact that I made mistakes? Absolutely not. And as someone who was faithful to the law, I believe I made the correction. Ms. Figueroa received what we believed that she was entitled to, or she believed that she was entitled to, as did Bach, as did Bartosiewicz.
Ms. Figueroa's matter involved a $25,000 settlement in 2011, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And prior to 2015, when you pled guilty in connection with a part of that matter, did she receive any of the $25,000?
Yes, she did.
Before the guilty plea?
The guilty plea wasn't accepted at the time. I believe I started making payments in 2015, and I paid it to her.
When did you begin paying her?
I want to say Mr. Azzarello and myself, Judge DePasquale gave me a year. It was paid in 5 months, I believe in that May of 2015 time frame.
And that was part of the PTI?
Yes.
Why was she not paid before?
Because she had a $32,000 bill that she had not paid.
Your legal fees in connection with the $25,000 settlement you represent exceeded the settlement?
It did. She quit in the middle of the case. She didn't show up for a deposition. She didn't show up for the settlement conference. And I understood. She was very distraught about her father. Furthermore, the issue about the unemployment, there is no hearing for federal unemployment or state unemployment unless that employee is denied unemployment benefits. I was with Mrs. Figueroa during the unemployment hearing, and I assisted and made sure. And to say that that was not part of the settlement, I'm not sure where Mr. McNamara is not getting that, because originally it was a $65,000 agreement. There would have been an offset.
Why did you forge her signature on the settlement check?
No, it was just a stamp, Your Honor. I didn't forge.
The check was made out to you and to Ms. Figueroa, correct?
Correct.
You're an experienced attorney. Why didn't you follow the typical practice of getting your client's signature on the settlement check?
One of the things she wasn't doing wasn't responding. I did send her a copy of everything. I confirmed that it had been settled. I sent her a copy of the check with a letter, and there was no response until a year and a half, 2 years later.
Did you present all of that to the OAE and to the DRB?
I did. I did it in person to Mr. McNamara when I met him on May 10th and May 11th. See, the problem I'm facing is I'm cooperating. I'm going down there, and I have Mr. McNamara telling me, I want you to resign your law license, and I haven't had any charges brought against me or any hearing, wasn't able to face any of the grievance or witnesses. We meet in May 10th and 11th of 2016. 2 weeks later, we need more documents. 2 weeks later, we need more documents. It didn't stop. And that's why in August of 2016, I said, this is enough. What had happened through the federal case, when the false arrest case, I found out that Mr. McNamara had been communicating with Hudson County Prosecutor's Office, because they knew they weren't going to get a statement from me. So what they did is they directed Mr. McNamara to take the statement of me, and that was brought to the Hudson County Prosecutor's Office. Now, just so I am clear, yes, I did plead to transferring a document I knew that had not been notarized. There are many reasons why people plead guilty. One is I had spent $130,000 between the Rotolo firm, John Azzarello's firm, and a firm that had started upon my arrest.
Were you under oath when you pled guilty?
I was, Your Honor.
Are, are, Are you suggesting to us you gave a false statement under oath?
I am not. What I'm suggesting is there was an opportunity. My attorney, John Azzarello, 911 commission, very astute gentleman, says to me, Pete, did you see that document notarized? I said, no. And that was the truth. I did not see her get it notarized. So that was what I sent it to the insurance carrier for payment. So that's what I pled guilty to. And I did it because my attorney didn't ask me to. He said, Pete, this is the way to resolve it.
How do you respond to the OAE's representation that you received 30 letters, none of which you responded to?
I don't believe that to be accurate, Your Honor. In this day and age, between emails and electronic filing, I responded just like I did when Judge Fullilove was involved. I responded to them.
Are you representing to us that each time you received a letter from the OAE, you responded to it?
No, Your Honor, I cannot say that.
Can you tell us approximately how many times you did not?
Maybe 3 times, 4 times.
Why not?
One, because I cannot practice in New Jersey. I have to work in New York, and so...
No, my question is, why didn't you respond on the occasions you've just told us you did not?
Because it had, Your Honor, because it had to do with something either that was already being addressed or it was a copy of a letter that Mr. McNamara's office was sending to the DRB that was saying, okay, here's our position. Mr. Kreshi has 20 days to respond. But I stand before you today. I try my best to uphold the integrity of the law. Have I made mistakes? Absolutely. And I've said that from day one. And I've made the correction. In my brief and after reading a lot of different cases, Justice Hohens basically said, look, this is supposed to be a shield for the public, not a sword. Now, I'm not even sure why, after Jan Richter investigated these matters, did they pop up years later. Well, there's an 18-month requirement that the OAE receive, investigate, and come to a conclusion for their grievances. Furthermore, I'm in District 6, or I was in District 6, had one hearing in January, and the same gentleman, Charles D'Amico, filed a grievance, Mr. Centenaro's co-worker. Not one witness showed up. 3 days, and I took the stand, and I gave truthful testimony. And that issue had to do with, he's filing tax appeals without people's permission. Well, the panel found I did not do that. There are at least a half a dozen other grievances that I had to respond to. And what these politicians in Hudson County, and specifically in Bayonne, and what they do is, they've been using the ethics system to bide my time. In other words, it takes up my time, it takes money, it takes time away from the cases that I have, which many of them have to do with fraud, waste, and abuse.
Let me ask you one question about the Figueroa matter. Ms. Figueroa has come forward and said you did not keep her abreast, you did not tell her about the settlement agreement. Is she being truthful?
No, I don't believe so. And here's why, Your Honor. When we set in federal court, when we set a Rule 16 conference and we the judge or magistrate judge promulgates a joint discovery plan, they have dates on them. They say, okay, you're going to have to complete your depositions by this time. You're going to have to attend mediation on this time. She was given that. She knew where she was supposed to be. For her to come back 2 years later and say, oh, he never contacted me. The record to the contrary. We copy everyone on all matters that go out. At that time, Pacer was involved, but we received hard copies too, and typically we would make sure Ms. Figueroa or any client. Your Honors, I know it sounds like this big conspiracy theory, but these people have, the same people, have had me arrested on a bad arrest warrant, on charges that you can't even use an arrest warrant for. Sent me for 26 hours in jail. First time in my life I never spoke to my four kids. Mr. McNamara rises 3, 4, 5 years after the fact in 2017 and files charges that Jan Richter had already investigated. So to say that it's some wacko conspiracy theory, that's not the case. Now, case in point, why would they do this? I didn't want to get into too much particulars, but after I completed my time as a business administrator in the city of Bayonne, Charlie Wolkowiak, a special agent for the FBI, contacted me and said, Pete, we'd like you to come in. Sure, no problem. So in July of 2009, I started, which is continuing to today, a relationship with the Newark office in how money is being stolen, how grants aren't being used correctly, how bonding, and there are 3 special agents. Mr. Wolkowiak had to retire. He's now working for the state. James Eagle Eye and Rich Wilfling, who is a new agent that had been transferred from New York City. And on each occasion, they've had me come in to look and say, well, how do these purchase orders look, or how does this look? The result was about, I want to say at least six individuals and companies have ended up in federal prison. The city of Bayonne officials, to include the police department and the mayor, they know this.
What does this have to do with the charges, the disciplinary charges filed against you?
Because they were solicited and brought forward by a Charles D'Amico, who was the Department of Law or the Corporation Counsel for the City of Bayonne.
Who is they? To be clear, you say they were solicited. Who is the they?
Ms. Figueroa was solicited. Mr. Bach was solicited. And to a lesser extent, Mr. Bartosiewicz.
And you're saying they were solicited to give perjured testimony against you?
No, to file a grievance against me. I do not believe that they are telling the truth. Now, they may be mistaken. And again, I have tried, and I think I have done everything I can to take care of those people, to make sure that they were satisfied ultimately with the service. I don't like to hear Mr. McNamara say, well, he bullied that person or he forced him to sign that. On a witness that I've not been able to speak to, that signed not only 2 certifications, but signed a federal estate tax return, a New Jersey inheritance tax return, all based on the same numbers. So I'm not sure how I bullied him. Your Honor, case in point, Mr. McNamara has me come down on the Bartosiewicz matter, and he says, well, what happened with the Avaya stock? You took the Avaya stock, you sold it, it was the Lucent stock. And it turns out Avaya bought Lucent. The client understands that. Mr. McNamara didn't.
I saw that in your brief, but I'm listening to you, and I'm wondering why all this detail was not provided in the answers to the charges that were first filed against you. I mean, we're here considering whether or not a default was properly entered. That's part of what we have to understand.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. The reason it was not is at the time when I made that answer, it didn't say, well, you took the Lucent stock. It said I misappropriated funds. And I knew I had not. Now, on an estate where, as we know, a federal estate return has to be filed. It's over $600,000. They had a house. And Mr. McNamara is saying that $3,000 is unaccounted for, which I don't believe. I don't believe Mr. McNamara.
So you're claiming that the charge was not specific enough and you could not respond to it? Is that your position?
Or it was general. Yes, Your Honor. It was general. And I figured, like we do in all our cases, you have some discovery and you're going to be able to cross-examine that individual and say, John, you had Lucent stock. Avaya came and bought it. It was a 3-for-1 reverse. The gentleman couldn't understand how.
But you're getting bounced on your answer, not on a failure to have discovery and have the kind of exchange you're right. purporting to have now with me. Where was this in your answer?
It was not in there because I don't believe the allegations were that specific.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, and I understand that a default has been entered. However, my understanding of In re Gavel is that you can't enter a default because unless an answer has not been filed or an unverified answer. Mine was both verified and it was an answer. If I may address one other issue, is under the entire controversy doctrine, as set forth in my brief, and Mr. McNamara touched upon it. There's a sealed federal lawsuit filed for the actions, and Judge Linares abstained. It went up to the Third Circuit. Now, the Third Circuit, one of their findings said, well, Judge Linares didn't address the issues that happened before August of 2016. And so in 1983 cases, as you may know, a plaintiff is allowed discovery, jury, from Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 30 through 36. That includes admissions, depositions to be taken. Our process here, our procedure here, does not allow for that, does not allow for admissions, does not allow for depositions. So one of the issues that Judge Linares has made clear is go to the state, and they have an avenue to address these issues.
Can you explain the context for the argument you're making now?
Sure. Yes, Your Honor. In a federal lawsuit was filed in August of 2016, and it makes several allegations that I repeat in my brief, one of which is Mr. McNamara and Mr. Centinaro have not complied with their own rules.
This is a lawsuit that you filed in federal court against the OAE?
Yes.
All right. And how does that bear on the issue in front of us today?
Well, because one of the issues is if we can vacate the default and I'm allowed discovery, I will be able to demonstrate the civil rights violations, the due process violations that have occurred and that are allowed. In Hospital Council versus City of Pittsburgh.
Well, I'm trying to understand.
I don't
you
understand
want us
that
to
at
help
all.
You with your civil rights suit? We have a disciplinary case before us that we have to decide.
No,
our job is not to assist you in your civil rights case. That's, you know, that's on you.
Right.
You have charges against you, and we have to decide whether or not this default stays or not. And therefore, I don't see the relationship between your federal civil rights suit and whether or not your default should be vacated. And one answer wouldn't be, oh, if you vacate the default, I'll have a better shot at my civil rights suit. No, we're concerned about the disciplinary charges filed against you. You understand that?
I do. I was trying to describe the contention or the tension between the two. I didn't want...
Now, how does that change whether you're entitled to vacate the default or not? Whether you had tension over there or not?
Well...
What do you hope to show by taking that position there you intend to bring here to vacate the default? What does one have to do with the other?
Well, it would have to do with the justice in the Third Circuit said that you can address these issues in your state case.
Yeah, so look, I haven't seen your federal papers. I haven't read Judge Linares' decision. But from what you're telling us, is he's saying you can't collaterally attack the disciplinary process through this federal civil rights suit. You got to deal with the disciplinary matter before the New Jersey Supreme Court. Is that what he said?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And if I may follow up,
go ahead.
The differentiation is that the federal lawsuit was filed 8 months before Mr. McNamara filed a complaint. Because remember, on April 19, 2016, he's asking me to resign my license, and Mr. Cornod from the Rotolo firm is saying, Mr. McNamara, there is no complaint.
Mr. Crechet, I just want to highlight for you, we're almost at the 30-minute mark. We've got several minutes remaining. What would you like to tell us?
Your Honor, what I'd like to ask and why I'm here is to vacate the default. I believe my answer is in compliance with NRA Gavel. It's verified. He may not like what it says, but I believe that after 26 years and no disciplinary actions up to this point, save the December issue, that an entry of default, vacating the entry of default, will allow me, as Your Honor pointed out, to address the issues here. Now, in summation, I that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes.
I want to make different points, but each of them are very short. First, respondent said that the OEA is wrong about the fact that he cooperated. This court temporarily suspended respondent for these cases. He remains temporarily suspended because of his failure to cooperate. The court has already made a finding that he did not cooperate. Further, in our complaint, we indicated count by count how he didn't cooperate in any of these cases, the three known misappropriation matters, as well as the practicing law suspended.
Mr. Crechet represented that he had provided documents to the OEA in those matters.
And we continued to ask for different documents depending upon what arguments he made or based upon what investigation we were doing. And he just stopped and got suspended by the court.
So you have some, but other requests have been unanswered.
Yes, and a lot of detail, Your Honor. In fact, before he was temporarily suspended by the court, this court gave him additional time to provide the documents, and that was all put into our affidavit, and he didn't do it, and he didn't respond, and the court suspended him.
Did he undergo more than one interview?
Oh, yes.
How many interviews?
I'm not certain, Your Honor.
How many?
Probably at least two or three interviews with me, but for what
about
it's worth...
Ms. Richter also, right?
Yes.
And how many with Ms. Richter?
I don't know, Your Honor. Maybe a couple with Ms. Richter as well. Ms. Richter was assigned to the case, then she retired from our office, and then the cases were reassigned to me. With regard to his consent, his argument about asking for his disbarment, when he was represented by counsel, it is very commonplace for the Office of Attorney Ethics, depending upon what we find in investigation, to raise the issue of consent and disbarment with the respondent's counsel, which is what was done, nothing more than that. Giving the respondent the benefit of the doubt to a question I believe that was asked by the Chief Justice about how many, I think it was both Chief Justice as well as Justice Albin were asking about the 30 letters, 30 is more than 30 letters, about whether he responded. And he said maybe three or four, I did not respond. Giving respondent the benefit of the doubt that he's referring to responding to the different applications that are before the court now, he is given a brief. In terms of the failing to cooperate and the practicing while suspended, which is listed in our complaint, he has never responded to any of the letters, not one of the over 30 letters, did not come to the office for an interview, did not file an answer to the complaint, and interestingly enough, in his complete argument today, never even mentioned why he has not answered that complaint and what his meritorious defenses to practicing while suspended would be. Because he has no defense. But he has never said that. He mentions Charles D'Amico, and Charles D'Amico is not a grievance in any of these cases. Director Centenaro was previously a prosecutor in Hudson County, I believe finished in 1999. To suggest that the OAE can be corrupted because Director Centenaro once worked for a prosecutor's office, the same place where Mr. D'Amico worked, it's hard to imagine how respondent can credibly try to present that argument without saying a single fact to support it. With regard to the court's question about the proofs of each case, with regard to Bach and Bartasiewicz, the money was not held intact. There were money in trust, and that was found by the OAE investigators about the money not being held intact. So even if this court were to entertain respondents' conspiracy theory that somehow these three unrelated agreements, Figueroa, Bach, and Bartasiewicz, had absolutely anything to do with each other and with Mr. D'Amico, the money was not held intact. So you could throw out the credibility of those people. He still has no defense to the knowing misappropriation charge in either of those cases. Quickly, just some of the other points. With regard to him saying that the knowing misappropriation case, that it wasn't specific enough to give him notice about what he had to say, I think that was in response to a question from Justice Levecchia. It's a 347-paragraph complaint. There's a lot of detail about every one of those matters with knowing misappropriation. For him to say that there's not detail there is just not truthful. And lastly, in response to, I believe it was Justice Alvin, maybe Justice Fernandez-Vina as well, about what does this federal lawsuit have to do with anything, respectfully, he's blowing smoke in terms of trying to just say anything in order to get this court to latch on to one of his theories. He says that it's a protected case and he can't say anything, but then he attaches exhibits about the federal lawsuit to his brief. He asked the federal court to try to hold off our ethics proceedings so that we couldn't investigate the case, and he was knocked out by the federal court. They said no, the ethics investigation statewide could still continue. So for him to suggest that somehow he should get some benefit from this court so that he can make some federal case better, in which he sued the OEE, the Director Centenaro, and myself, putting into pleading my home address over nothing of substance at all, is just very, very disrespectful to the judicial process and to the ethics process in terms of cooperating fully with the Office of Attorney Ethics. The fact that he may have come to our office on multiple occasions does not mean that he cooperated. It just means that he did steps in terms of the ethics process. But I don't believe that this court would suspend this respondent and that he would remain suspended for the last couple of years if he was fully compliant with his responsibilities in providing the documentation and cooperating with our office.
Thank you. Mr. Kresge, do you want to respond to what we've just heard? You can have up to 5 minutes.
Very, very quickly. As we know in the Martyr case, I ask that the justices view vacating the default with great liberality. Obviously, myself and Mr. McNamara have quite a history. These weren't visits to the OAE. They were 8-9 hours, days. And just to clarify the record, I met Ms. Richter 4 times face-to-face, Mr. McNamara 3 times face-to-face.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, Your Honor.
What do you say to Mr. McNamara's claim, the OAE's claim, that you failed to keep the Mortgage Plus and the Bartasiewicz matters, the monies in those cases, intact? And he's claiming that there was a Wilson violation. There was a deliberate misappropriation.
There was, I disagree that there was a willful misappropriation. I do agree with, on the Bach matter, that there was less money in that sub-account.
So you concede the monies weren't intact, but you're saying that this was other than a willful, deliberate violation?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And okay. And when Ms. Richter brought it to my attention, I went to the trust CLE. I did as John Bramrick tells us in those CLEs, hey, someone has a problem with money, pay them the money back. It's not worth the time. Move on. Make your client happy. And that's what I did. Although, you know, Mr. Bach was not a client. He was a third-party looking for his mortgage referral, but...
Please go ahead.
Okay. Just real quickly, the what have I been doing the last 2 years while I was temporarily suspended? Not for misappropriation, as Mr. McNamara and the DRB has said. They said you're not cooperating. And at that time, what my attorneys, what we had done is we'd gone into federal court and say, look, no one is above the law. I'm not. I made mistakes. But for Mr. McNamara never to mention these cases are from 05, 09, 10. They were investigated by Jan Richter. And then Mr. McNamara miraculously revives them after the arrest by the Hudson County politicos doesn't work.
So you're suggesting that because it was improperly obtained, you could ignore the order and practice?
Yeah.
Or because you went to federal court to raise a defense of this, that you get because you believe the order was improperly entered, that you can practice?
No, Your Honor. And I don't.
Have you been practicing while you were suspended?
Not in New Jersey, absolutely not. In Pennsylvania, I think Mr. McNamara went to Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania said, no, we're not. And the type of work I'm doing now is the type of work I did when I was in the service. I'm doing boards, employment discrimination boards. And I do not and have not represented people in New Jersey other than myself and my wife. Without to being redundant, I'm requesting that the default be vacated. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Court will take the matter under advisement. Court